now from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH. This is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. Glad to be with you. Jacob Albrock, Tommy Gester here on a Tuesday morning. Feels like a Monday. Hope everybody enjoyed the Labor Day holiday. We are, Tommy, we are ready to cram it in this week as we have a ton to cover from the weekend and a ton to get ready for as well as we make our way through it. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're really excited about it. We've got to talk K-State football, KU football, get you ready for a Chiefs game in just a few days. Things are happening with the Royals, and it's all what's on tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company, featuring Yumkin Pumpkin Ale, WBC's most popular seasonal beer that's made with actual pumpkin and served with a spiced rim. Yumkin Pumpkin, now available at Wichita Brewing Company. Pizza and beer made here. Good morning, Tommy. How are you? How was the weekend?
Man, a lot to get to on the show. Busy weekend. Tons and tons of college football culminating last night in the debut of Bill Belichick in North Carolina. Didn't go according to plan for him, at least. A good night for the Big 12, though. TCU demolishes North Carolina. But there were big-time matchups all around the country in college football. As you mentioned, the Royals, and we've got NFL just around the corner. It's going to be a busy day.
It is going to be a lot of fun. Didn't go quite so good for the hoodie last night. I sprinkled a little on TCU. I'm sitting there thinking about it, and I'm like, is North Carolina even good? Like, does Bill Belichick even know what he's doing yet in college football? Like, TCU is going to be a good team. So that was eventful. Good for the Big 12. Always good to see the Big 12 take down ACC or anything cross rival, anything like that. A lot of attention, I think, for us will be K-State and KU, and we're going to have the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, in next segment to help us with K-State, but certainly a lot to sort through there, Tommy, and a lot needed for the Cats to get to where, you know, they wanted to kind of start the year. They're not there yet. You know, can they get to where they ultimately want to be? I think, you know, we have a long season to get to that point, but at least to the starting point, they're not where we or probably they thought they would be started this year.
Yeah, I mean, they narrowly avoided disaster on Saturday against North Dakota. And North Dakota is they're good, but they're not up near the top of the FCS schools. And so it was a little shocking, a little surprising that they hung with Kansas State and had chances to win that ball game. There were a couple of moments there for the Wildcats where it was pretty nerve-wracking, I would imagine, if you were up at Bill Snyder Family Stadium on Saturday. Not a good outing for them at all. They do squeak out the victory, but I would say today a lot more questions than answers regarding Kansas State.
There's no question. It's just like, what happened to the defense? And we'll get Wyatt Thompson's take on all of that. If I had told you K-State would be 1-1, almost 0-2. And Avery Johnson's kind of played fine. You'd be like, wait, what? It's weird. It's a little bit weird. And KU, I can't wait for him to play somebody this week because I don't know what to take away from Fresno State and Wagner, right? Like, I'm glad they played well, but now let's see him play somebody and really get a good stack of them. So it'll be a good college football week, an eventful college football week for sure. And of course, we start the NFL season with Kansas City Chiefs. We're going to Brazil in just a couple of days here. Let's go. I'm ready for this. We know Rashee Rice isn't going to play. This preseason is done. We've got contracts signed. All the drama of the offseason is for the most part finished all across the NFL. Now it's time to play football. We're going to do that in 2 days, Tommy. 2 days. We're playing NFL football for real. Let's go.
Yeah, I saw Najee Harris is going to play for the Chargers. He's coming back from that fireworks mishap that he had over the 4th of July. So the Chiefs will have to contend with him defensively. We're getting to that point. We're going to be seeing official injury reports coming out over the next couple of days. But you're right. I mean, we kick it off on Thursday. We've got Cowboys and the defending champion Eagles going at it Thursday night to kick off everything. And then, of course, the Chiefs and Chargers in Brazil on Friday.
Yeah, it'll be it always feels like it's going to be the greatest NFL season ever. And it usually, you know, keeps us entertained. And then the Royals, Tommy, don't, you know, they get one game against the Tigers. It was exciting. I was at that game. It was a lot of fun Saturday. But here we go. While they're gaining ground on Seattle, now Texas is 9-1 out of the last 10. They've won 6 in a row, and they've jumped them in the standings. So, you know, that's not good for the Royals either. They're not going to catch, I don't think, the Yankees or the Red Sox at this point. They trail both of them by 7 games. Like, it's going to now be a 3-team race for the final wild card between Texas, Kansas City, and Seattle. And we'll see what happens. But they had the day off yesterday, which I found a little bit odd on a holiday like that. That doesn't feel like that ever happens in Major League Baseball. But they needed a day off. It'll be good for them to catch their breath. And, you know, here they go. They jump right back into the fold tonight with the pressure on. You're playing a team like the Angels. You got to beat up on a team like the Angels. And we'll see if they can get it done.
Yeah, you got to take advantage of this series. You have to take advantage of when you play Seattle head-to-head coming up in a couple of weeks. It's going to be a mad dash to the finish line for this team in particular, but all three teams that are competing for that final wild card spot in the AL. September call-ups happened yesterday. Jack Caglione is back. They call up Carter Jensen, so we'll see if he can make an impact at the big league level this month and help the Royals to try to get a wild card spot. And then Jonathan India goes to the IL. He's got a issue with his left wrist, and so we'll see how long that keeps him out. They've got a significantly more depth than they did a couple of months ago. So that's probably not the end of the world for the Royals.
Yeah.
You would obviously like to have India healthy, but as long as he can get that rehabbed and get back before the playoffs, you feel pretty good about that.
Yeah, we're gonna have plenty of reinforcements there for India. But it's, you know, yesterday was the day off, first and only day off for 2 weeks here for the Royals. So it's a pretty critical time. We're gonna give some stuff away today, and that includes our first chance to win some Tyler Hubbard tickets September 14th. Here we go. Just a couple of weeks at Equity Bank Park. This is a big time show. And they announced it not that long ago, Tommy. So we've got your opportunity to win. If you want to go to see Tyler Hubbard, here you go. A pair of tickets. We're going to have 10 winners to this. So your shot to win a pair of tickets begins right now. Just text the keyword Tyler to 20357. Tyler 20357 to get your winner in. You can score that pair of tickets. It's Tyler Hubbard with Drew Baldridge on September 14th at Equity Bank Park. Good luck, everybody. We'll give away some HTO later in the show as well. Thanks to Prairie Fire Coffee for keeping us fueled up and, you know, primed for this Tuesday that feels like a Monday that follows a big sports weekend that leads us into an even bigger sports weekend. Let's go. And we're going to do it. We're going to start you off with the K-State talk. Was probably the story of the weekend, not for all the best reasons, but that's where we'll start today with the voice of the Wildcats, Wyatt Thompson, when we return. What is going on here? What can be done? What do we even take away from what we saw on Saturday? How much concern do we need to have from Saturday? And how quickly can they get things turned around? We'll talk to Wyatt Thompson about all of it when we return. We've got Royals, Chiefs, KU talk as well. Tommy, I'm ready. This is the first week that feels like, hey, it's the fall. The weather wasn't ideal yesterday for like pool parties or summertime, the end of summer. Fall got a head start, and we're going. This week in the sports calendar, it's the fall. We're coming right back.
Okay, take it easy. We're going on the air.
This is Sports Daily on KFH.
And welcome back in, everybody. We welcome in Wyatt Thompson, the voice of the K-State Wildcats, our insider there. Wyatt, it is a little weird start to the K-State football season. A little different than I think any of us expected here. What was the vibe like there on the Labor Day holiday around Manhattan?
Well, you know, after the press conference yesterday, I had a chance to visit briefly with Coach Kleiman, and you know, he's fighting them a little bit right now, to be real honest with you. They did not play, as you probably saw and or heard, in the first half. It was not necessarily the performance anywhere in the hemisphere of what they wanted. I think they were really good in the third quarter, and frankly, pretty dominant. And then I don't know whether they let up or there were maybe an adjustment or two made by North Dakota, but then they fought back and you have to go win the game in the waning minutes. Not what they wanted for sure. But I think Coach said it best. Winning these games are hard. You may be upset, and that's okay. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit here. But they found a way to win the game, and now you try to build from that. And there are some things that we can talk about that are going pretty well and some that are not so much. So have a way at it, right? Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you look, you know, defensively, Wyatt, especially with the secondary, North Dakota kind of had their way with the secondary for Kansas State. They had some pretty long, sustained touchdown drives in that game that is unlike and not anything that I expected to see from this Wildcat defense. What was your major takeaway from what we saw defensively and especially with the secondary?
Well, Coach said it after the game, and then he said it yesterday. The eye discipline was awful. Those are his words, not mine. Awful. And I don't think you can play this game that way. You have to be locked in. You have to be ready to go and be assignment sound. And I think, to be honest, I think there were guys that overran plays, guys that were in the wrong spots and that kind of stuff. He even hinted a little bit yesterday about VJ Payne, who's one of K-State's best defenders, you know, trying to do too much, helping other guys. And I think that may be part of it, too. I want to give all the credit that I possibly can to North Dakota because they were a hard team to prepare for because you didn't really know what you were going to get. I don't know if you guys would agree with this assessment or not, but I thought their quarterback was not only good but played well and had some weapons. And when you combine that with the lack of eye discipline that K-State had and you know, the inconsistencies in which they played, it made a game out of it. You know, it's just reality.
It's a little weird to me, though, Wyatt Thompson, voice of the K-State Wildcats, joining us. I just didn't expect that from the defense after what we saw against Iowa State. I think that was what was so jarring to me. You know, we watched the Iowa State game, and it felt like it was sort of the offense that was slogging along a little bit, but the defense looked strong. And then at home against North Dakota, all of a sudden it was like, well, what is this defense? You know, that's what's a little confusing to me and makes it a little trickier to know, like, what should I be taking away from this? Which thing is real?
Well, I think that is I wish we could have recorded that and played that back. That is very astute on your part, because which way do you go, right? I almost look at it as a roundabout. Am I going to go around in this lane or go out this way? We don't know. I, too, was disappointed in the defensive performance after being very excited after week one, even in defeat, about what they were and how they played, how they got after the quarterback, you know, forced a couple of turnovers. The one thing that they did do is they did get, at times, pressure on the quarterback. And I think, hopefully, knock on wood, that'll be a constant with this group. I think they've got the ability to do that, and they're doing all of this basically without Ryan Davis, who's, along with Toby, one of the guys that they talked about being a difference-making person. So I'm good with that. You know, you don't hear this phrase very often, if ever. I don't think Austin Romain played anywhere in the hemisphere of what he's capable of doing, and he's maybe K-State's best defender. So what we're describing here, or trying to, is just the inconsistency, the ups and downs. And what are they really? Well, maybe it's a little bit more in the middle if they're going to play like that. What I choose to look at, and maybe this is just the the Wildcat in me here is how they played in the third quarter after what I would say, you know, they got routed at halftime, I'm sure, by the coaches, and they came out and dominated. North Dakota, I don't think, had a first down in the third quarter. K-State had a 10-point lead after that period. You know, they were good. Their offense and defense was good. But I think you have to look broader there, too, because of the inconsistencies. The team is, in some spots, still fighting some health things, but getting better. Depth things, but hopefully getting better. And now you got a team coming in here that they're going to be angry. I don't know how much you guys follow Army, but they won 12 games last year, had a great quarterback and a great running back. Those guys are gone, thank goodness, for our sake. But they're going to come in, and they didn't play well at home against Tarleton and lost in two overtimes. So they'll bring it, you watch. Guarantee it.
You know, I guess if you want to find a glass half full mentality and think of it in a certain way, shedding a positive light, I guess you could say Kansas State did show quite a bit of resilience towards the end of that game. I mean, they very easily could have lost that game. It looked like they would probably lose the game late in the fourth quarter, and I didn't think that North Dakota's clock management was all that good down the stretch, giving Kansas State an opportunity to go down and win the ball game. But I guess if you want to look at it from a glass half full perspective, there was some resilience where, you know, they could have easily folded and walked away with a home loss. Would have made things a lot more difficult as the season progresses. So, I mean, taking that away from the game and the performance on Saturday night, there probably are some building blocks that you can take from what happened on Saturday to move forward.
Tommy, I agree with that wholeheartedly. And I think when you're down like that, who do you turn to? Avery Johnson.
Yeah.
And with the game on the line, he responded. I mean, they had an 80-yard touchdown drive to win the game. He was virtually flawless. Coach, I think, was very, very, very pleased with not only the performance, but just his demeanor, calmness, confidence, those types of things. I think you build off of that. This football team is somewhat built offensively around him. I think he and Jace Brown have a really good chemistry cooking right now. They targeted him 16 times. He had 12 catches. There's a lot of things there. I do think that Bradley and Tibbs are starting to kind of get their feet underneath them a little bit. You still had to play the game without Dylan Edwards. Will he be back this week? I think that's still up in the air. I was encouraged by Devon Rice, and I've liked Devon since I first saw him, freshman from Bishop Gorman High School in Las Vegas. He can do a lot of different things. He can help you in special teams. He can run the ball. He can catch the ball. And it helps out Joe Jackson as a second option. So if they do, in fact, get Dylan Edwards back, he's in the plans. He was such a big factor of what they were going to do. I think it'll only make them better. But hopefully some of these other guys are coming around. But one thing that has to improve offensively, okay, away from Dylan Edwards coming back, and Coach has talked about this after both games, the offensive line and pass pro has been pretty good. But they need more surge and more consistency in blocking in the run game, period, end of story.
Is it, as we look at this and we see a loss to Iowa State and an almost loss to North Dakota and like refocus on the Big 12 and trying to get to the championship game, have you seen the progress into year three now with Avery Johnson and thrown an interception, 5 touchdowns, he's completing almost 70% of his passes. He's been enough of a weapon in the run game. I don't think we've unlocked him there yet, probably on purpose, but you know, are you seeing in year three the development that you wanted to see out of him? Because it feels like we are.
I think we are for the most part. That last part of your question, I think, is the real key to this. In that he has been a part of the run game, but I don't know if this is an accurate way to put this. I don't know that he's just cut himself loose or they have cut him loose in the run game yet.
They want him to, do they?
Well, I don't think so. I think there's a really fine line there, and you guys know this. Our fans know it, too. I think in a perfect world, if you knew he wasn't going to get hurt, let him rock.
Yeah, right.
Right?
Yeah.
Because when he has the ball in his hands and he gets out in space, he is a nightmare times 50, right? But you don't want to run in between the tackles a whole lot. You don't want to – he's got to – I think he has a pretty good feel of, you know, seeing things and when to get down and protecting himself and all of that. So there is a fine line there of you want him cutting it loose on every play just because of the skill set, but I don't know that that's going to be something that happens, you know, as much as most fans would like, and including this fan you're talking to. I really like him, and I think he's a very gifted player, but you also have to protect him because behind him, the coaches are still pretty up in the air on who's the next guy in, and the competition is pretty tight between those other three guys.
It doesn't get talked about a whole lot, Wyatt, but, you know, through the first two games of the season, I would say that the special teams for the Wildcats has left a lot to be desired. You know, of course, you had the muffed punt, you know, early in the game against Iowa State, had another turnover on Saturday, penalties on special teams. In your mind, what's going on with that unit?
I think they're still trying to find themselves. You know, the real question about special teams going in was going to be the kicker. We haven't necessarily seen a lot out of Luis Rodriguez, but what we have seen, I think you get encouraged by. But there are some things in the special teams area that have been pretty concerning, honestly, right? You mentioned the turnover. I think coach is totally committed and loves Rice Nuremberg. I think he's got the potential to be a good returner, but, you know, turnovers are turnovers, and you got to try to clean that up a little bit. But even up and above and beyond that, I think, coach, again, going back to that depth thing, the depth is where they really develop young guys, whether it's a Logan Bartley or, you know, as one example, they see the field there first, and then that leads to them getting opportunities in other spots. And it's such a big thing. I was talking to Wesley Fair yesterday at the press conference, and he said he's on basically every special team, but he's not playing every special team because he's a backup, because he's playing so much and is a starting safety now. So you get what I'm saying here, that they're working there to get better. And in some of those spots, you know, you've got some pretty darn young players manning those positions. And I think we've seen some mistakes. And when that happens, you get exposed a little bit.
Real quick, Dylan Edwards, you mentioned it. What does Wyatt Thompson's gut say? Hold him through the bye for there, or are we going to maybe see him before the bye and back to Big 12 play?
Well, I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think we'll see him before the bye. I don't know that we'll see him this week, but I do think it is somewhat possible. But I'll go out on a limb. And again, this is just me. This isn't right. Any of the coaches telling me this. I'd be surprised if we don't see him, if not this week, certainly for Arizona. But again, that's what I think. And probably we'll find out a little more in the coming days. But I was encouraged by some of the comments yesterday about some of the health of the guys. He didn't necessarily specifically mention Dylan, but you almost feel like, you know, maybe he's starting to, you know, get a little bit closer.
And then let's look at Army real quick. They're not going to throw the ball. We know North Dakota did. So if the secondary is the problem, I think Army threw it 12 times in the double overtime game last week. They're going to run the ball. So different sort of challenge for K-State. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, it could be both. I mean that sincerely, because they run the triple option and it's so difficult to prepare for. You don't see it very often. Coach reminded all of us yesterday at the press conference that he has some history with Jeff Munkin when Jeff was at Georgia Southern, had some fabulous games back in 2011 and 2012 in the FCS playoffs. I think he said both were semifinal games. They don't have the same quarterback, Bryson Daly, from last year, but Dwayne Coleman is a little bit more athletic and does have the ability to throw it some, which gives you a little bit of concern there, especially if they are able to run the ball. They do have a good running back in Hayden Reed, but they also use Noah Short, who lines up in the slot, and they use him a lot like we use Dylan Edwards. They move him everywhere. He'll run the ball. He'll catch the ball, and he's got really pretty solid speed for them. They're still kind of finding themselves, too, after winning 12 last year and losing quite a bit, because not only did they lose Daly, but that superstar running back is now at Arizona State. So they lost some guys in the portal, too, and it seems weird for them to have that happen, right or wrong. But this is a big game for K-State. You got to go get this one, and then you start honing in on Arizona.
Well, Wyatt, you guys will have a lot of fun with that broadcast. I'm sure it's always a lot of fun to play the service academies anytime that you can. It's a Saturday evening kick again, ESPN game back on national TV.
Yep.
Let's see if they can get it done.
Yeah, and you need to. And I think cleaning things up, I'll say it that way again. I think all fans are going to walk in to the stadium in that with that mindset of, are we going to be better in special teams? Are we going to be more consistent in the run game, run blocking, that kind of stuff? And then what about that eye discipline on defense? I'd be watching all of those things.
A triple option eye discipline?
I know. 100%. It's got to go together, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not easy, man.
You're gonna get tested on that. All right, Wyatt, have a great call this weekend. We'll be back normal schedule next week to get it recapped, and hopefully we're breathing easy for the Cats for the first time this year.
Nice talking to you, fellas. Appreciate it.
There goes Wyatt Thompson. Oh, boy. Tommy, that's a stressful weekend for Cat fans. It's a stressful start of the season for Cat fans. You know, it's all about K-State versus K-State right now. It doesn't really matter, probably, for any team in the Big 12. We've talked about this all summer long. Are Big 12 teams getting in, you know, right now with this even and everything else that we expect the league to be? It's going to be tough to get more than a team in there. Until somebody runs away with this thing, which doesn't look like it's going to happen, these are all sort of tune-up games for the games. Well, Iowa State was not, obviously. But all the games now to this week and next week until you get back into conference play, we got to see him play better.
You have to. And I saw some people online talking about how, well, you know, you got to cut Kansas State some slack because they just were in Ireland and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Well, Iowa State, they were just in Ireland and they bulldozed their opponents over the weekend. So, you know, I don't know if that particularly holds water, but it's a tense time right now in Manhattan. You're 1-1, almost 0-2 after just about losing to an FCS school. You've got to clean it up. You've got to get better. I agree with Wyatt. I do think we'll see Dylan Edwards sooner rather than later. If he can go, they're going to have him back out there. My opinion on that has changed. Initially, I thought, hold him out until Big 12 play. You clearly need him to be more than just a one-dimensional offense. You've got to have him out on the field, and you've got to get him acclimated with the offense if he's healthy. So I don't know if we'll see him this weekend, but I do think I agree with Wyatt. More than likely, we'll probably see him back out there against Arizona.
Yeah, and look, it doesn't have to be he comes out and carries the ball 30 times right away. Come out and carry the ball 10.
Yeah, just get him worked back into the offense before conference play.
It's early enough. Look, it's early enough in the season where we can try to say definitive things like North Dakota's not very good or Iowa State housed South Dakota. Maybe North Dakota's way better than South Dakota this year. Who knows? Doesn't matter. K-State has to play better than that, right? We could look back at the end of the season, K-State could be really good, and we look back and we're like, oh, wow, North Dakota's in the FCS playoffs right now. That ended up being a really good team. Doesn't matter right now. Right now, you just played an FCS team at your place, and you didn't play good enough. So play better. That's it. They got to play better. They got to play better football. Avery Johnson looks good. You know, that was the first box for everybody in this season. He looks good. So take it from there. Tommy's good weekend. Went up to the Royals on Saturday. By the time we got in the car and able, we turned the K-State game on. One of my kids is a K-State fan because they're purple and they're the Cats. And so we caught the final drive. Like, that was the only thing we got to see until I was able to go back and watch some of it. It's the only thing we got to see of the actual live game. So kids were riding high. Son got a Bobby Witt Jr. jersey, and he hits the home run in the eighth, and then we get that. They were on a sports high on the ride back.
It was a good Royals game on Saturday. They had to have it. I mean, because they did not get it done on Friday. They did not get it done on Sunday against Scoobal. So they had to have that game on Saturday. Clutch home run late in the game. For Bobby Witt Jr. I was going to ask you, did you have a good betting weekend? Were you able to make some money?
Yeah, I tailed Glasser on LSU, which was eventful. His only miss, by the way, for those that keep track of this thing, and I know there are a lot of you out there that do, his only miss was Notre Dame. So I made some money with KU. I think I had Wagner the under parlayed together. And those hit. I think that's what it was. And then I won some money with TCU last time. I haven't bet much, Carl. Like, you, it's almost, you'd be embarrassed if you saw my NFL betting slips, because I'll make so many NFL bets. Nothing for a large amount of money, but I just make tons of them. I don't really do that with college football. Like it'll be KU and K-State most of the time. And then once we get a little more Big 12, I'll kind of bet the Big 12. Or if it's a situation last night, one game on, it's like, all right, fine, let's take a side in TCU, North Carolina. But I don't bet college football the way I bet the NFL.
I had a horrible betting weekend. I don't think I won a single bet. And it was due large in part because the majority of games that I bet on, I was taking the overs, and it seemed like none of the overs hit. I mean, I know last night did, but like Texas, Ohio State, it was 14-7 was the final score, and I think I bet the over on that. There were a few other ones. I know I bet the over with Notre Dame and LSU. I think the under hit on that. I mean, there were a lot of games that I threw on the over and didn't get anything done. It was not a profitable weekend for me.
Yeah, we'll get there with the NFL. Don't you worry. We're going to get there this week with the NFL. It's coming, baby. I'm traveling this week too. I won't be with you on Thursday and Friday. So I've got to get everything set up. The good news is all the player props are already out for the most part. They're not all parlayable yet, which is, that's kind of how I bet the NFL usually is like putting player prop, whatever. So we're not there yet, but I've got to get that all done. I love it. Two hammers. I will tell you, two hammers for college that feel like hammers for me this week are a K-State rebound and cover, because I think their line is being suppressed greatly, as it probably should be. I mean, it's still a risky play, but if you believe in the Cats at all, I think their line's like 17 right now. And the other one is a KU over against Missouri. Now, I haven't watched a lot of Missouri. I had them up on like the four screen thing, their first game, and I just kept looking up and I was like, dude, they're at 55 in the first half. And KU, as we make a transition to them, when they want to, has looked near unstoppable offensively so far this year. What I don't love about college football is KU has played Fresno State and Wagner. And so, like, I don't know what any of this means yet. Like, I don't know how to compare Fresno State to Wagner to North Dakota to whatever. So, like, college football, like, I cannot wait until maybe there's expansion and there's more pressure to get rid of the Wagner games. And then I hate them because it doesn't teach us anything. I will say though, for KU, it's teaching us that they look as good as we could hope that they look. I mean, I think optimism should be at its peak for KU fans, but this week, like, let's just go in with an open mind about what this team is so far. I don't think we still know. We just know that they've looked as good as they can possibly look given who they've played.
Yeah, as of right now, I'm not going to bet anything on the Kansas-Missouri game. That may change as we get a little bit closer. But right now, I'm staying away from it entirely because, yeah, we don't know. And by the way, people want to call this a rivalry game. It's more than a rivalry game. Like, this is a... Yeah. Deep,
it's one of the top in college.
Like a deep level of hatred between these two universities dating back 150 years. The fact that the rivalry went away for as long as it did, is egregious. And it's back. And that's great that it's back. I almost wish, and this may be controversial, I almost wish that it wasn't a home and home, because some of my favorite Kansas-Missouri matchups were at Arrowhead. And I wish that that's where this series was played every single year. Although, having, home environments and all of that in alternating years will be fun. And with the new stadium in Lawrence next year, that'll be, awesome too. But man, those games in, when was it, 2007, 2008 at Arrowhead, the Border War, some of the best football I've ever watched. But the fact that this matchup is coming back, I'm staying away from it as of right now. I'll reserve my right to change my mind, but I'm staying away from it for right now just because it's been so long since these two teams have matched up against each other. I just don't have a good feel for it one way or another.
I mean, I don't know how we have good feels for anything in college football, even when we have had great matchups. Like the people trying to close the book on Arch Manning, it's like, have you ever watched college football before? Like you gave a kid, you gave a kid that has had almost no experience in opening assignment of going to Ohio State and playing
with
a historically good defense. Like if you don't, if you think that right there is it for Arch Manning, I mean,
I get it, but he was objectively awful. Like it wasn't even like he was, you know, mediocre.
Guess how many quarterbacks are going to go to Ohio State and look awful this year?
Oh no, I get it. I mean, and look, like you're taking this guy in his first, you know, big time start to the shoe and taking on Matt Patricia's defense and all of that. Yeah, it's going to be a daunting task. He'll bounce back for sure. That being said, though, I do – my overall assessment of Arch Manning has probably declined a little bit. Like, I'm not sure that he is a world beater anymore,
right? Yeah, I guess it depends on where you had him. Like, the Heisman talk and all that. I've always thought that was crazy. Like, he hasn't played, like, almost at all.
It wasn't
what are we doing here?
It wasn't – though. I think here's where I stand on it. It wasn't just – the fact that you're going to Ohio State, big pressure game, you're the number one team, you're taking on Matt Patricia's defense, defending national champs. It wasn't just that. I don't know if you had a chance to watch his mechanics at all.
Yeah.
Coming from the pedigree that he's got and growing up in the Manning Passing Academy and all of that, those were egregious mechanics. Like some of the throws that he made, it had nothing to do with the defense and the looks that he got. It was just like horrible mechanics that we saw from him.
I watched plenty of Eli Manning play football too. Like it's not all Peyton Manning. It's not all the robot of Peyton. Like give the kid a chance. He'll be fine. People, it's like everyone turned into Paul Savage on Saturday. Like, oh, he gets paid so much money. I can't believe he's not perfect right now. Like what? Like,
I don't think that was
Columbus playing his first game ever.
I will say that was a great Paul Savage impression. Thank you. But I think it was just jarring, and I watched the game from start to finish.
I will agree with that's a good adjective.
It was jarring just watching how horrible he looked on the field. And it was also more jarring when you're watching it and you're seeing him in basically every commercial. And then you come back from break, and he's throwing incompletions and picks and all of that, and you're like, wait a second, like this does not compute for me. Like I'm watching him in a Warby Parker commercial 30 seconds ago, and then he's back on my screen throwing the football. And I mean, he looks objectively bad. I think that was the jarring part for me.
I don't know how good he'll be. I've never known how good he'll be. All I know is he kept losing the job to Quinn Ewers. And I think that meant something to me anyway. I'm like, I don't know. Like, what? Why is everybody crowning Arch as the first overall pick? And the great, like, we have to see him play. He's not won the job now. He's like, he was 0-3 or whatever it was in winning that job to begin with. And, you know, let's just let the kid play. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen. And I'm not being naive. Of course, it's not going to happen. And I appreciate all the Uncle Rico things and everything else. back to KU, though. Jalen Daniels, and it's sort of the opposite of that, right? Jalen Daniels looks like the Jalen Daniels that came in a couple of years ago as the preseason Big 12 Player of the Year. But he's played Fresno State and he's played Wagner. So on the complete other end of the spectrum, I'm just ready to see KU do this against a competent opponent so we can know a little bit more. I don't know how you could be any more optimistic out of what you've seen from him specifically, and it all starts with him, especially right now with this team when we don't know a whole lot about them. We know a lot about him, and when he's right, he's a Heisman candidate, and he hasn't been right like that until probably, the end of last year? Before that, it had been a couple of years since we've seen him play at that level, and he is doing it right now. Can't wait to see him step in against an SEC team and try to give it a shot.
Yeah, it goes back to the conversation we had last segment with Wyatt Thompson about letting Avery Johnson loose and whether or not that's even something that K-State wants to do with Johnson. I do think, on the flip side, that is something, for the most part, that the Jayhawks want to let happen with Jalen Daniels. And I know that he's injury prone and all of that. But this is, by all accounts, I mean, it really is Jalen Daniels' last chance. And so let it all hang out. Go out there and do your thing and just ball out and do what you know you can do. That's the important thing. I do think that even the game against Wagner, you know, they put up a bunch of points, but they weren't at full strength offensively. LeSean Williams, the backup running back, didn't play. He suited up, but he didn't play in the game on Friday. He should be available for Saturday's game. Having a 1-2 punch with him and Daniel Hyshaw, I think, is important because that can potentially help soften up the Missouri defense somewhat to allow Jalen Daniels to go and do his thing and throwing the football. But you've got Emmanuel Henderson, who looks like he is the real deal. And the game against Wagner, I mean, he balled out for sure. And he was the guy in the game against Wagner. It was Cam Pickett in the first game against Fresno State. So there were so many questions going into the season about what does the receiving core look like for Kansas with the loss of Grimm and Arnold and like the top pass catchers for Daniels. Those guys are gone, and now you've got a couple of new guys that are in that look to be that they look to be productive. And you know, that I think that's a key positive as well, because Daniels can do all the things, but if he doesn't have guys to actually catch his passes, then it's not going to work out. And it looks like he does.
Well, and it goes into the, here's a hot take for you. I don't want Jalen Daniels running the ball. Avery Johnson is an electric, gifted runner, unlike few players at the position in college football. That's not what Jalen Daniels is at his best. He ran the ball more last year than he ever has before because he wasn't throwing the ball well. If you go back to his really good college years, he doesn't run that much. He doesn't run as much as people think he does. It's in his bag, but it's not like Avery Johnson, who we were talking about, who can make a house call. Like, I want Jalen Daniels throwing the ball the way he's been throwing the ball. I think that's when he's at his best. The more of the Mahomes split on throws to runs. Like, yeah, it's there. I can use it when I need to use it to pick up a first down or get a touchdown, but I'm going to beat you through the air. And that's what he's done this year so far. And that's what I've really liked. He hasn't had to bail and you know, use that crutch. He's looked really good. Can't wait to see it against Missouri. We're going to have much more on this game throughout the week. Shreyas Lotta will join us tomorrow. We got another hour of Sports Daily. Don't go away. Right here on KFA. Oh, man. We are in football season here on Sports Daily. We're so excited for it. Thanks to Wyatt Thompson for joining us to talk a little K-State. Cat fans rightfully uneasy right now through 2 weeks of the college football season. We'll see if they can bounce back Saturday against Army. Chatted a little bit about KU. Beat up on Wagner, as they should have. Now we get their first real test this weekend. If you missed any of that, you can go back and listen on the Odyssey app. It's all there for you. Gets podcasted out. We appreciate Max for doing that. Thanks for everybody listening on the Odyssey app, on KFH, watching us on our video streams. We're glad to be here with you. We are going to talk some Chiefs, give the kind of the first looks this week. It's a game week. Normally on Mondays, starting next week, we're going to have Joshua Briscoe of the Chiefs Radio Network joining us to help with the Chiefs this year. So that's fun. We will greatly miss our dear friend Dan Israel, who had been a part of this show for a long, long time. And I know that's weighing heavy on everybody's hearts there in the Chiefs Radio Network. But we'll have Joshua in, and he'll do a great job. That'll be coming starting next week. It'll be following the opener. Of course, they play on Friday this week. We're going to talk a little Royals baseball this week. We'll look around the rest of the sports world as well, because it was a busy weekend in general. That's all coming up for you. It's all What's on Tap, brought to you by the Wichita Brewing Company. Featuring Yumpkin Pumpkin Ale, WBC's most popular seasonal beer that's made with actual pumpkin and served with a spice rim. Yumpkin Pumpkin, now available at Wichita Brewing Company. Pizza and beer made here. Thanks to Crestview Country Club for being a great sponsor of this show. So yesterday, Tommy, was the Labor Day pool party. So there are usually three big pool parties out there at Crestview. You've got Memorial Day, July 4th, Labor Day. All three of them had bad weather this year. As somebody in the iced tea business, I can relate to the bad weather of the big holiday weekends this year. It's been a little poorly timed, but it is. So we go out there yesterday, like we're going to the pool. They can heat the water, so you still, you know, it's not a big deal. So we get out there and the sun kind of comes out and it's cloudy when we first get there. And I'm like, you know what? I'll get in. So I'm in playing with the kids. Don't really think too much of it. Sun comes out. It actually turns into like the perfect pool day. When you had some sunshine, it was in the mid-70s, the water was warm. I look like my shirt right now. Like, I made it through the entire summer without a bad sunburn. I kind of went team swim shirt. You know, we're 40 years old. It's like, well, who am I trying to kid here? Why am I messing with this? I'll just get one of these swim shirts and I don't have to worry about all the sunburns and the sunscreen and all that. Well, yesterday I was like, I'm not getting in the water with that. It's 70 degrees. I'll freeze my tail off. One time. and I got fried yesterday at the pool. It's 75 degrees. I make it the entire pool season, and I got fried yesterday at the pool.
It's like a parting gift from summer to you.
Goodness gracious,
the final day.
Tan is coming.
Yeah.
I'll get nice and brown for the fall and winter. And then I tried to go play golf and I got rained out. I was like, ooh, that sun came. I was like, I got to get in. There's like a 4:30 because it was supposed to rain. I'm like, I'm going to do it. And I made it like two holes. Then it got rained out. I was like, damn.
I took my 4-year-old out on Sunday and we played. We went to church in the morning and then my wife and my two boys and I went and had lunch at the clubhouse, and then my 4-year-old and I went and played 18 holes of golf, and he hung out.
You got him through 18 holes?
We got through the entire 18. I mean, you know, I have to make it a little bit more entertaining for him. I've got a, you know, show on my phone pulled up, and he's watching it in the cart, and but I got to play 18 holes, and he would go up and putt with me on the green, and it was a beautiful day, like cloud cover. It was kind of cool, not hot at all. It was great. We had a great time.
Yeah, it was. It's always a great time. We appreciate Crestview. I can't believe you got him through 18 holes.
I did.
I played Friday, and it was perfect weather. It was cloudy, but it was not. It never did rain on us. It was a really good golf. We're entering, I think, what you and I would call prime golf season. When it's not so hot, it's not too cold yet. Because I'm not like I don't like playing in the cold as much as probably you do. But we appreciate Crestview Country Club. Always available out there to go and play golf. I'll ask them about their memberships. We make our way into this hour. What was like of all the things, and I know we just talked about it, was Arch Manning the biggest sports story of the weekend, or was Bill Belichick the biggest sports story of the holiday weekend?
I mean, Bill Belichick has recency bias because it just happened last night. There were three major storylines, and I think that the good news for Arch is that his was the very first one, and so there are other things that have come up to kind of get the narrative away from him a little bit, but it was Arch number one. It was how average at best Alabama looked against Florida State, and there are a lot of concerns with that program and Kalen DeBoer, and isn't going to work with him. That's number two.
I loved that Florida State quarterback as a quick aside.
Oh, he was great. And then number three was Bill Belichick last night and the storyline surrounding that. By the way, I love the Florida State quarterback just because of his name. Every time they said Tommy Castellanos, I'm like, that's pretty damn close to my name. I mean, Florida State looked really, really good in that game, and Alabama looked average at best.
Yeah, it's just so harder. I love those games. I love that we got Clemson LSU. I love that we got Notre Dame. That Notre Dame game against who did Notre Dame play? Oh my God.
Miami.
Yeah, that Notre Dame Miami game was outstanding. That was an outstanding football game. That was fun. Both teams, both quarterbacks looked pretty good. That looked like a late season game. As you know, we're still learning all of these teams and all of their new players, and like to speak in definitives right now about college football seems crazy to me. The definitive major takeaway for me over the weekend is that Ohio State's defense looked fantastic. That's, you know, like of all the biggest things happening that probably aren't going to change at all, that's probably the one of the major things that, like, I think Arch Manning's going to play better. I think Notre Dame is still a national title contender. I don't think the book is closed on Clemson because they lost LSU. You know, all of these things are like, okay, they played big time games early in the season. I think that's the one, and probably that it's not going to be a great year for Bill Belichick in North Carolina. That's probably the other one for me.
Do you buy into the narrative that this North Carolina stint is tarnishing the legacy of Bill Belichick?
No,
or do you think it's completely separate from anything that he did with New England?
Separate. Does it tarnish that he was a terrible coach? Well, he wasn't a terrible coach. They had a terrible record before he got to New England, that Pete Carroll was his second job in Seattle. I don't think so. I don't know why it would tarnish anything. It just is totally different. Like, here's a 72-year-old guy trying to go relate to college football. I've never thought it made sense. I'll be honest with you. I've wanted to be wrong about that as much as anything, because I think it could be a really cool story. I just don't know how it could possibly work. Like there doesn't seem to be any fit whatsoever, other than Bill Belichick's players generally have all really liked him, I think. But like, what is a 72-year-old guy who's never really coached in college? How's he supposed to navigate this landscape now? Like, the guy that doesn't ever want like attention, and we hear the way he answers questions, and it's all business as usual, and he's had teams buy into that. Have you opened your eyes to see what college athletes are like nowadays? Like, we need announcements that you enter and then take yourself out of the transfer portal. There's never been a more attention-seeking generation, I don't think. Like, it just doesn't seem like it's going to be a good fit.
Yeah, the problem that I have with the whole situation with Belichick in North Carolina is that I don't know, even after they played last night, I'm not sure that I can tell you the names of five players on that roster, but I can tell you who he is, and I can tell you who his assistants are. You know, like, I know that. I can tell you the name of his 24-year-old girlfriend. I can tell you the name of the general manager that he hired, Michael Lombardi, who's been with him for a long time in the NFL and is now helping him run the program in North Carolina. I can't tell you who the players are. Like, I mean, they're, to me, they're like nameless faces, and the program is about Belichick. And I think that's a major issue.
I will be honest with the listeners here, and I think most people need to be honest with this too. How many teams in college football outside of K-State could you tell me five players on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, I think that, there are a few. I mean, the higher profile programs, for sure.
Maybe Texas for me this year.
Ohio State
lost all their players. Yeah. They lost all their players, though. Like, I don't know that I know five players yet. Like, I it certainly didn't before that game. Like, that's what makes this all, and case, whether it be K-State, like any of it, like, give me until, I don't know, the end of this month to really have some definitive takes on college football. We've seen most teams play one game so far, and we've only seen a handful play a game of any significance that hasn't just been a cupcake game. So it's way too early to define, it's too early to define Belichick's tenure. TCU could very well be a very good team, and by the end of the year, UNC could be good. I don't think they will be.
Nobody was paying any attention to TCU, though. I mean, if anything, it was about how North Carolina was going to come in and just wipe the floor with them, whatever. TCU, they made a statement, and I think that Sonny
earned some good players.
I think Sonny Dykes has his program clearly going in the right direction. They were 9-4 a season ago. They could be a dark horse contender for the Big 12.
The Big 12 is going to be so drunk this year. It's going to be so much fun. I wish we had two guaranteed teams in, because it's going to be absurd, I think. All right, we'll come back. Let's talk Chiefs. We got a game in a couple of days. Here we go. Next on Sports Daily.
It's time to get back to the sports talk.
All right, let's do this thing. Go!
Sports Daily is on KFH.
right, welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are glad to be with you here on this Tuesday. Feels like a Monday. It is a Tuesday, I assure you. We're glad to be back with you. If you want to win a cup of HTO right now, you can text the keyword tea to 20357. Go and try the all-new caramel apple iced tea, just launched yesterday. So go in, check it out. You can get a free one on us right now. It'll be good for East Wichita or West Wichita or Derby. That's tea to 20357. Good luck, everybody. We come back in, and we're going to talk a little NFL. We're going to talk a little Chiefs. Tommy, did you see that Hollywood Brown's good to go and we should see him in the game? Did you see that Matt Nagy yesterday was talking about the deep ball and how they want to emphasize that again this year? I don't know how much I'd expected in this game against the Chargers. I do think it's going to be more of, and look, last year it was an emphasis early in the year too, until it just never worked. And then it kind of got away from it. They got Hollywood Brown back in there this year. I wish they had Jalen Royals. I wish they had Rashee Rice, but they don't. But these other three will be fine, plus Travis Kelce. I do expect the Chiefs to try to throw the ball around a little bit against the Chargers.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, certainly they have got to figure out a way to get that deep ball going at a much more consistent clip than a season ago. And we've talked about this throughout the entire offseason, that honestly, regardless of the personnel at wide receiver, it was going to be some schematic changes. It was going to be more of a play calling change, more of a playbook change, where, you know, they could find ways, hopefully, to unlock that deep ball a little bit more than what we've seen in recent years. And so I think that even with Rashee Rice gone for the next 6 weeks, that doesn't really change the ultimate game plan. It might change the way that the wide receivers produce, because you don't have your wide receiver one on the field. But if we're talking Hollywood, we're talking Xavier Worthy, any of the wide receivers for that matter, it's next man up. And I know that's kind of cliche, but it's next man up, because what you can't do if you're the Chiefs is revert back to the way that the passing game was a season ago, where it was just pedestrian. You've got to try to find ways to unlock offense down the field, not just in small little chunks, not just short and in intermediate passes, but you've got to try to find ways to get over the top and utilize the speed that some of these guys have in Worthy. And, you know, even in the rookie Jalen Royals, you've got to try to find ways to get them going early on in the season, because then once you get Rashee Rice back, it should be all systems go, but it's got to start now.
I don't think that the Rice news makes this receiver room, you know, thin or bad, but I do think it puts him on thin ice to be into a bad situation. But look, with Hollywood and Worthy and Kelce and Juju, there's plenty there for Patrick Mahomes to do his thing early on. Is he better with Rashee Rice in the offense? 100%. Will he be better with Royals in the offense? We hope so. But right now, this is enough. And I do think they'll try to throw the ball. And it's not like the thing I think to watch more than anything else in this first game and early in this year, season for the Chiefs, to if they're going to sort of unlock and go back to what they were, for me, and something I have thought, that is, how comfortable does Patrick Mahomes look in the pocket early on? His protection is almost certainly going to be better this year. It's funny, I'm watching that. If you watch that Kingdom documentary, they go through the whole thing. They never talk about how bad the offensive line is. Like, that was the story. They have a documentary about last season, and in the entire thing, we never really hear anybody asked about or talk about how bad the line was. It's the elephant in the room. It was awful. It was the thing that cost them a Super Bowl. And at times it cost them much more than that during the season. So can Mahomes let go of what he had to deal with last year in that regard? He'll never say a word about it. The coaches won't say a word about it. Mahomes certainly won't say a word about it. But can he be comfortable in the pocket again? Because he's going to have better protection this year. I mean, he just will. It won't be worse. It could be as bad, but it won't be worse, because it can't really be worse. So how quickly can he be comfortable again there? Because if that's the case, that to me means more than which receivers are out on the field. It's is he able to be comfortable again and have the time to throw a deep ball and not have to throw a deep ball while rolling to his right on the run because he's on the run all the time?
Yeah, when you combine all of the injuries with Rice and Brown and Isaiah Pacheco in the run game, you compound that with bad left tackle play and the lack of time that Patrick Mahomes had in the pocket, the Chiefs averaged right around 5 yards a play in 2024. That was down by over half a yard from 2023. And even in 2023,
They were compressed in 23.
That still wasn't great in 2023, but it even declined more in 2024. And they're down near the bottom of the NFL, like they're 22nd or 23rd as far as average yards per play a year ago. You've got teams up at the top like Baltimore and Detroit and teams that, you know, they're getting bigger chunks every single play. And a lot of that is, like I just mentioned, the bad left tackle play and the injuries that they had. And they were really relying on Kareem Hunt to get a couple of yards. They were relying on the dink and dunk passing game. They were, you know, really leaning on that. And that was the bread and butter offensively. It was kind of death by a thousand paper cuts for the defense. It worked. Don't get me wrong. I mean, the Chiefs were able to move the chains. They were able to score touchdowns. But offensively, we all know that they never scored more than 30 points in a game a season ago. Like we know that about this team. They were not able to unlock their offense for a variety of reasons. And so now that you've got the personnel better on the offensive line, at least at left tackle, now that you've got a healthy Hollywood Brown, obviously Rashee Rice is still out for a while, a healthy Isaiah Pacheco, basically the personnel is in place. Now you've got to actually see the play calling reflect that. And I would highly anticipate we see the Chiefs take more shots downfield, and it wouldn't surprise me if they get this going starting on Friday. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me at all if we see them try to take the top off the defense pretty early when they play in that game against the Chargers.
I think we will, and I think Hollywood Brown allows them to do that. I'm curious to see if Xavier Worthy gets back to any of that because he has been so good in the Rashee Rice role. I don't think so, but he could. He could, and Tyquan Thornton does that too, by the way. Like that's kind of, he's been a guy that could do that over the years too. So they have a couple, they have several options to do it. I think it's, I will tell you, I've already put something on a Mahomes, Kelce, Worthy. Like I think Mahomes throws the ball a lot, and I think Kelce and Worthy are the recipients for most of it. I just think there's the added wrinkle, yes, of the deep ball. But Mahomes is very comfortable peppering Worthy now with targets. Look at the way he ended last year. And we've talked all summer about what we think about Kelce, or what I have about what I think about Kelce. I think he has a renaissance season as a pass catcher. And maybe his role is a little bit different on the team this year. But we'll see. The Chargers are going to be a challenge. The Chargers, whatever you think about Justin Herbert, and I know the playoff game last year leaves a bad taste in people's mouths a little bit. He was insanely efficient last year, didn't make mistakes. I think it was a reflection of probably what his new head coach was asking him to do. I would guess more than anything, that's what was happening. I don't know how much more they're going to open things up. I do think adding Keenan Allen back in is a move of pretty major significance for them. And they have the ability now, more so than last year, they have more talent in the backfield than they did a year ago. So they're a challenge. Like, this is not, what is the line? 3 points? Like, I don't feel great about it right now because the Chargers are going to be a challenge. I'm real interested to see how Harbaugh attacks the Chiefs defense. Like, where do we see them attack? And what do they feel like they can exploit against the Chiefs defense? I don't know what I would do if I were Harbaugh. I would always try to start with running the ball because that's the formula to keep Mahomes off the field. But I think they could find some success early on throwing the ball too. The Chiefs secondary is going to get challenged right out of the gates here.
Well, I certainly think it's running the ball first and foremost. I think if they hammer that heavy, you know, because I mean, keep in mind, if Najee Harris is healthy and it sounds like he's going to be able to go, you combine him with Amarian Hampton, and he looks to be somebody that can potentially be a major contributor offensively for this Chargers team. I have some pretty deep concerns about the defensive tackles on this team and their run-stopping abilities. I don't know if you followed it much, but there's kind of been an upheaval in that position group in the last week or so. We know that the Chiefs went and acquired Derek Nnadi, which is really bizarre because they let him walk in free agency just a few months ago, and then Brett Veach gives up a late-round draft pick to come and bring him back, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and they ended up placing Mike Pinnell on waivers, and Pinnell is now, I think he's with the Bengals. He signed with them a couple of days ago. So it's weird because Pinnell played more than Nnadi did a season ago, and they let Pinnell walk. Well, first they let Nnadi walk. Now they're bringing him back and letting Pinnell go. I know they signed Jerry Tillery as kind of a replacement for Tershawn Wharton. Tillery's had a really quiet camp. And then Omar Norman Lott had a lot of hype going into training camp. I don't know if he's going to be a contributor anytime soon. So I think if you can attack from a run defense point of view, if you can attack that position group, I think honestly that's where the Chargers will have a lot of success, especially early on in the game, to set the tone to keep the Chiefs offense off the field. I think they can have success against the run defense that Kansas City is going to deploy.
Yeah, I do too. I'm a little more, I'm worried about all of it. I was skeptical that the defense could be great last year, and they were pretty darn good. I'm even more skeptical this year. Another age of Chris Jones, another year of age, I should say. They've lost some stuff in the secondary. We'll see. It's going to be a fun game. Like I'm really excited about that game because I think it's going to be tight. I mean, right now it's a 3-point line. The over-under is 45.5. I would probably lean to the over. I just went back and looked at week one last year. There's not really an overwhelming trend. Like there were high scoring games in week one all over the place last year. So yeah, I probably leaned to the over. You never know about going to Brazil, but honestly, and they've been asked about this, like, what about going? It's like, it's to open the season. It's not like going to Brazil in the middle of the season. Like, you haven't had anything before it, you'll be fine. They'll be fine. I don't think that's going to have a tremendous amount of impact. What is the flight to Brazil versus the flight to Miami? You know, like how many more hours is that through the air? 2-3 maybe I'm undershooting that a little bit. I don't think it's a ton. Like, it's not really going to matter to them to go down to Brazil to play. Like, what difference does it make? It's a road game. It's a road game to start the year. So I don't think that's going to suppress much either.
I don't think it will. I mean, NFL teams are so used to playing international games nowadays. Going to London, the Chiefs played in Germany. Like there are, this happens quite a bit now. I don't think that it is as big of a factor playing an international game as like college teams. Like when K-State's going to Ireland to play, that's a bigger adjustment, I think, than an NFL team going to Brazil.
Okay, so I was way wrong. I don't know which part of Brazil. Where are they playing this game? Rio?
Sao Paulo. Sao Paulo, Brazil.
Sao Paulo?
Yeah.
It's longer than I thought.
Yeah, it's a decent flight, but I don't think it's that impactful.
It's more like flying to Europe. It's almost 13 hours. So it's a long flight. Miami's like 4. I was way off. I'm not a geographist here. I'm sorry. I don't know the flight times.
You don't look at maps. You're not a map guy.
Well, I just don't know when you get into flights. Like, I don't know what the difference is.
You're probably the guy that you go, you know, on a road trip with your family and you're lost and your wife is like, will you just go and ask that guy for directions?
Oh,
you're
no,
like,
no.
I'm not going to do that. Like, I'm good. I'm fine.
I just plug it in. I just don't know how much difference once you get that high in the air, like how much time can you, I've flown to Hawaii 5 hours, longest flight I've ever been on. And it was long, you know, but I didn't get off the plane and couldn't walk or anything like that. Like, yeah, it's a long flight.
They'll be fine. They'll be okay.
They'll be just fine. And the Chargers have to make the same one.
They're not hopping on a little puddle jumper to get to Sao Paulo. Like, yeah, it's a luxury hotel stay, essentially, for them on their way down there.
They'll be fine. If it's not going to be that suppresses the offense, if there's offensive suppression in this game, it'll be because the defenses do that. But I am excited about this game. I think that this will be a great test for both teams. I think the Chiefs are going to play a lot of really close games this year again, which is why, like, the 15 win thing, that ain't happening. They're not going to get all the lucky bounces, but they're going to play a lot of close games. Like, their offense will be better than it was a year ago. I think their defense will be worse than a year ago. I think the Chargers are better than they were a year ago. How could you not think that? Like, how could you not think the Chargers are better? I know they lost the offensive lineman Slater, but they've still got a pretty good offensive line. But it's year two under Harbaugh. Their backfield's more talented. They added Keenan Allen to essentially the same wide receiver room, which is a plus for them. Like, they're going to be a better team this year, I think, than they were last year.
I don't know if I'm going to go that far and say I think they'll be a better team. I think that they have more weapons than they did a season ago. I think Ladd McConkey has shown that, you know, he is a top-tier wide receiver in this league. And I don't know. I think the jury was out on that, you know, in his rookie campaign. I think that he's shown that, you know, he can be somebody that's maybe a top 10 wide receiver in this league, you know, overall. I'm not as high on the Keenan Allen reunion as I think you are. And it's not a knock on Keenan Allen, but he's old.
He's old.
Yeah. And reunions with your former team rarely go as good the second time around as they did the first tenure when you had it with the team. I'm not saying it's a bad move, but I think we temper our expectations a little bit on the impact that Allen will make offensively on this team. There's a reason why they moved him, why he left the team a couple of years ago. So I'm not as high on that. I do like Omarion Hampton quite a bit. You know, I know they've got, even with the Slater injury, I know they've got a pretty solid offensive line. So that will probably, you know, allow him to break things off and be a pretty talented running back in this league. So I think they've got more weapons, but I'm going to stop short on saying I think they're a better team than they were a season ago.
Najee Harris is going to play. I think Keenan Allen's better than the number two options they had there. Ladd McConkey only played one of the games against the Chiefs last year, I believe. You might remember it was early in the season. He still had a nice game, but he wasn't like peak McConkey yet. I think he missed the second one. He was hurt. That we'll see. It's going to be fun. I cannot wait. I apologize to everybody who was writing down in ink that the flight was not that long. It's long. It's a 13-hour flight, but they'll make it early enough. And again, it's not coming off of anything. They're starting the season out. They can leave whenever they want to and give themselves enough time. I think they'll be fine. Cannot wait for it. You'll hear it on the Chiefs Radio Network over with us on KNSS. Can't wait for that either. Tommy, it was Royals weekend that, you know, it's just like, meh. You know, it's kind of fine. They're okay because the Mariners didn't play very good, but now they've been passed by the Rangers. Are you like me? Or are you just like eagerly awaiting to see if Jack Caglione's in the lineup tonight? Because I can't help myself.
I think he should be. I think he probably will be.
Right?
They need all the reinforcements they can possibly get down the stretch. I do think, and this is one thing I as soon as I saw the news that Cags was getting called back up, first thing I thought about was that's great, but I absolutely do not want him to take at bats away from Mike Yastrzemski. Like, that's got to be number one. I mean,
just need to.
Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen because they need to have both those guys in the lineup every single day and find a way to make it work.
I agree. He doesn't need to take anything away from Yastrzemski, although the game I was at, they pinch hit for Yastrzemski late for Tyler Tolbert, and it paid off. It was okay. Tolbert worked a walk and ended up scoring the go-ahead run at that point.
I hope that's the exception and not the rule. If they can use Tyler Tolbert like a Terrence Gore 2.0, that's the best use for him. Like, have him be a pinch runner late in games. He doesn't need to start. He doesn't need to pinch hit.
I look at this as, you know, you're not getting another day off until the 15th after yesterday. I'm a little uneasy with Lorenzen and Lugo going in the same series, but it doesn't really matter. Like, it's going to be a thing we have to watch because they both, to me, need kind of quick hooks right now. And September call-ups will help a little bit there, but it's going to be dicey. I will say this, score a lot of runs. That's going to be the ticket, I think, for the Royals down the stretch, which is why I love like Cags rejoining the lineup. The offense is going. Cags is like at some point in his career, I do think, and I don't know if it'll be now, we'll find out, is the kind of offensive player like we have seen with stretches with Vinny Pasquantino, certainly with Salvi and Bobby Witt Jr., where they can kind of carry you through a week a little bit. I mean, he's got that kind of transcendent, you know, pop and power and everything else. So we'll see if it all goes through. But I do think they're going to have to kind of slug their way through this thing if they're going to get there, because there's too much right now in the rotation that you just can't really trust.
Yeah, and one positive note from the weekend is that the one game that they won came on the heels of the first appearance from Stephen Kolick. And, yep.
He was pretty good.
Is he somebody that you want to strap a rocket onto right now? Probably not. I mean, he's fine. They acquired him at the deadline. He's been in the minors since they acquired him. He had a decent amount of success with San Diego. But I do think that added depth is important, and getting him out on the mound to be able to pitch. And I was concerned when I first saw that Noah Cameron wasn't going to pitch and Kolick was. And I thought, man, like, is there something wrong with Cameron? But it just sounds like it's fatigue and that they want to have him be rested and ready. So they're just having him skip a start and all of that. But I do think that having Kolick at the ready to be able to help, provide a reinforcement in that rotation. And maybe that's to give Lugo a little bit of time off. Maybe that is, to come in and be kind of a spot starter at times in September. I'm okay with that. I think that's a decent way to utilize this guy, to allow your pitchers to be, I guess, as rested as they possibly can be in this really crucial final stretch of the season.
I'm glad they're all there. It's September. I don't know if it's an advantage for Kansas City over other teams that they've got a little more. It probably is. I think it probably is, because you're talking about a playoff team right now with 40% of the rotation at minimum. A little like something, I don't think anything's wrong with Lorenzen, but something's wrong with Lugo. But 40% of your rotation needs reinforcements early. Whether or not Quatraro does that with those guys, I guess we'll find out. We'll find out tonight. He's probably more likely to do it with Lorenzen than he is Lugo. He's kind of been, sticking to it with Lugo.
I don't know. He hasn't been overly aggressive with Lorenzen either lately. I mean, we all know what we're going to get from Lorenzen, but for whatever reason, Matt Quatraro does not go to the bullpen when he should.
And the bullpen's been up and down really good. I was with the family at the game, and Zerpa comes out in that spot, and I'm just like, yeah. And they do like special intros.
You can't stand Zerpa. Like, you just have a,
that's what I told her. I said, no, I said, he's been good. Like, I like Zerpa. I said, but I'm nervous every time he comes out. That's what it is. I've said, I'm always nervous when he's on the mound, because he'll either get the job done, which he has done far more often than not lately, and I'm really glad they have him on the team, and he's a lefty and all these really critical things. It's like, it just unravels quickly on him when it goes bad. So we're about to have a wild ride, and he got the job done. He did. Schreiber was really good. Did you know they do intros now for every relief pitcher that comes out? Like you'd see with a closer. Like, they all have their song. The lights go out for all of them, and I'm like, what is going on? Now enter the game, Angel Zerpa. And I'm like, hang on. Like, what just happened?
You got to give you got to give props to the guys that don't get a lot of attention.
I just didn't know it was coming. I was like, we're not going to Estevez in the sixth, are we?
A lot of times those middle relievers, like, you only know about them when they're bad. Like, I think it all kind of snuck up on everybody how good of a year John Schreiber is having. And especially Zerpa too. But, especially Schreiber since the All-Star break has been lights out. And so, yeah, I'm cool with giving them a little bit of pop and circumstance. I'm okay with that.
I like it. I think it adds to the experience, which is fun. I've told you before, my son loves the Get Loud, right? And he loses his mind during the Get Loud. We had seats. We were split. So there were four of us in one section and two in the other. And when he was back in the other and I was down there, you want to talk about a proud dad moment? Tommy, he's 10 rows behind us. There were two, 10 rows behind us. And I can hear him heckling up there. He's 6 years old. Scream, come on, you can do better than that. Like, I'm like, was that Braylon? And Michelle's like, yes, that was him. That's it. Like, I can hear him heckling in a stadium full of people from 10 rows behind. And I'm like, God,
yeah, that's a proud dad moment. Was he heckling the umpire? Was he like, come on, Blue?
I use just heckling. Okay. Doesn't matter. He's kind of like me. Like when I'm at the kids' games, like I have to, especially now with soccer, like our oldest daughter moved up to the full soccer field. And I have no idea the strategy of a full soccer field. Like when they're on the little fields, they're like, well, just go get the ball and kick it. Like, go get, you know, now I'm literally asking like the coaches before they give them the other parents. I'm like, okay. So when I yell at her, like to just like run fast, I was like, is that right? And they're like, no, they actually don't want it. Like they, and I'm like, okay, but I just got to yell at the clouds. I got to yell at something when I'm in a sporting event. I'm not the parent that just can sit there and watch. Like I can't do it. Whether it's at the refs or the, you know, the umpires or the players, like it doesn't matter. I just got to be like yelling at something.
Yeah, I got to try to tone myself down because I'm the same way. Like I can get awfully fiery at a game and yell and heckle and all of that. My son is starting like rec league basketball this weekend. Is this very like first time we've ever had an organized sporting event for my children, and it'll be the first one of these events that I will attend. I've got to try to tone it down because I don't know how I'll be. I need to be better than that.
I got a pretty stern elbow the other day yelling at the ref of the soccer game, asking if we're playing football or soccer and are we watching linebackers out there? You have to, like, you're not supposed to do that. Like, yeah. It's a big faux pas, but I'm like, I can't, like, it's bred into me. Like, I can't help myself. So I hear Brett and I'm like, see, like, he's just yelling to yell. Like, it's not a thing I can control. The other part that made me really proud, or it was late in the game. And it was, I think, one of the relievers coming on, and it was like a get loud. And and this is when he's down with us. He starts screaming like uncontrollably, like he gets loud. And the dad, like two rows behind us, was pretending to throw holy water on him. Like he was like a little demon, just like losing his mind. And then we saw that guy in the same hotel we were staying at having breakfast the next morning, which was really funny. He was like, I felt so bad after I did that. My wife, I looked at her and I was like, I can't believe I just said that about that kid. And I was like, no, we think the same thing. Like he loses his mind. When he sees get loud on the screen, we just know like, oh, here we go.
It's an invitation to get loud. Like
he follows directions.
You're telling me to get loud. I'm going to get loud.
Yeah. But you know, it was good. They'll need a little more of that Bobby Witt Jr. power down the stretch that they saw on Saturday. Too bad against the Tigers. Tigers just have their number, man. They just have their number. But they're done with the Tigers now. It's on to the Angels. It's on to the Twins. There are six games here. You now have a new team in the mix in Texas who is white hot, who came back last night in the ninth inning again against the Diamondbacks that you don't play them anymore. So it's going to take just a bunch of wins down the stretch here. And before you have to go to Cleveland for four, which who knows what's going to happen there, and have a road trip of Cleveland and Philadelphia next week, take care of business this week. Six games against, you know, six teams that are against two teams that are not playing particularly well. They're not the worst teams in baseball, but, you know, go get them. Go win 4-6. Win both series.
Yeah, I mean, minimum. I guess the good news, the silver lining with the Rangers is that, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Royals do have the tiebreaker against the Rangers. That would be like the one team in the mix. Because, I mean, they won the season series, yeah. I would think, between them and the Rangers. So that's a benefit. But you're still battling the Mariners. Obviously, you get them head-to-head down the stretch. Those games are going to be extremely critical. But you got to get it done against the Angels. You have a great opportunity starting tonight.
So the two teams there that you play, they've combined one like five or six of their last 20 games. Like, you know, it's not, I think it's maybe it's seven, but it's not much. Like these are teams that are on their way down, right? Not on the way up. Put them out of their misery. Go put and look, like it is not crazy to say, go win all six of them, right? Texas is back in this thing because they got on a six game win streak. Texas looked dead last week. Now they're on a six-game win streak, and it's like, whoa, what is happening here? Seattle is kind of flirting around, kind of farting around at 500, and their lead's almost gone. So it can still change over a week's time. Like we're very much still in that mode. We'll see if the Royals can take advantage and get in on it. But this is as good a chance as they'll have. They won't play until maybe the end of the season. The difference is the end of the season, that six-game stretch comes on the road. This is the most opportunistic week, schedule-wise, left on their schedule. They're all at home. They're against two bad teams. This is it. This is the last chance to just really kick somebody while they're down.
You've got 25 games left remaining in the season. Minimum, you've got to go 16-9, maybe even better than that, 17-8.
86 wins.
You know, 17-8, somewhere around there to get to 87.
Very possible.
I mean, they've got one of the best records in Major League Baseball since July 1. So it's not out of the question. They can still get it done. Well, I mean, we're not, you know, we're not burying them yet. You've got to... You got to get it done, though.
They gained ground over the weekend.
You've got to get it done, though, against opponents that you are objectively better than. And it starts tonight with the Angels.
I agree. That'll do it on a catch-up Tuesday here as we're trying to make up for the day off on Monday. Tomorrow, Wednesday's show, we have Shreyas Latta in. He'll join us to talk a little KU. Big show announcement tomorrow as well. Stay tuned for that. Tomorrow, we will be one day away from the start of the NFL season.
I can't
Let
wait.
That sink in.
Let's go.
I got to get Shreyas' take on KU and what he thinks about this Missouri game, too. Royals baseball tonight right here on KFH. Don't miss it. We'll be back to talk about that as well tomorrow. For Max and Tommy, I'm Jacob. See you then.